This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Welcome to the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast podcast, Best Bits from the Business Breakfast, which broadcasts every morning, weekdays, 6am through till 10am. This is the Best Bits from Wednesday, April the 24th. Coming up, we will get more details on the latest deals to come out of the state visit of Oman. The leader of Oman here in the UAE high delegation and high level talks between the two countries, which have resulted in some pretty far ranging deals, technology, infrastructure, railway links, all on the board. And of course, green energy as well. So we'll get more on that. We've got Sarah Brooks, who joined us live in studio on a Wednesday morning. Sarah is an HR expert, HR consultant, in fact, the managing director of Fikra HR. Interesting thoughts coming through from Sarah. In fact, we picked them up from a post she put onto LinkedIn, where she suggested that some firms in the UAE might have broken not just rules, but the law by not doing enough to keep their employees safe during last week's wet weather. That prompted quite the response from our listeners. So we'll dive into that one now. Frank Heimberger is the Chief Personal Lines Officer at GIG Golf. That's the company that it was formerly AXA Insurance. We got him on to talk, well, all things insurance. Why? Because everyone wants to talk insurance at the moment with all of the stories doing the rounds following the rains. The UAE Central Bank have come out earlier on this week issuing that notice to all lenders, finance companies and insurance firms to support people affected by last week's torrential rainfall. What does that mean for the industry as a whole? A question we put to Frank, amongst others. And we also got the opportunity to talk retail as well. Why? Latest numbers out from Dubai Chambers. They are their aggregated 2023 retail sales numbers. Good. They are more than good, in fact, and tracking in the right direction with regards to projected volume growths moving forward. Mohammed Ali Rashid Luta is the president and the CEO of Dubai Chambers. He was kind enough to join us live on air a little earlier on today. That's all coming up right here on the Bite Size Business Breakfast podcast. See you tomorrow from 6.
Insurance premiums are going to rise. That is the view of GIG Gulf, the insurance company based here in the UAE, formerly AXA Insurance. We're going to be speaking to Frank Heimberger of GIG in about half an hour's time, but this is what he has told us. He said 1 week after the flooding, the trend in claims shows a predominance of individual motor claims, with expectations of a rise in home and travel-related claims as assessments continue and impacts become clearer. He said there are operational challenges, the market facing challenges due to unprecedented events, but he says we are improving what he calls claim management through using digital tools. And he goes on to talk about coverage. He says loss of cars and damages due to natural disasters are covered under comprehensive insurance, but he says claims are assessed individually in the light of clear instructions issued by the authorities. And that, of course, brings us back to that statement. Just to recap, on Monday evening, you were looking at this yesterday from the UAE Central Bank, which runs the insurance authority. The name, the word that probably most of us hadn't heard of on Monday morning, but have now if you've got a claim, is SANADAC. Yep.
Yeah, it sounds like one of those sort of programs you run on a computer, doesn't it, to protect it from something or other wise. But no, it is the organisation that you go to in dispute. A central bank have made their statement. It's not so much an intervention, it's more a directive from the central bank. It's now down to the banks and the respective. I think the big announcement to come out of the central bank yesterday was that pressure they exerted upon banks and insurance companies to put a hold on repayments, loan repayments for 6 months, be that for car or home insurance and otherwise. That deferral payment is a little bit of a buffer for those that have suffered significantly. That's not to say that, you know, a lot of people have reacted to that one yesterday and gone, brilliant, okay, great, so I don't have to pay for the next 6 months. Look, it's going to be case-by-case basis, etc. Plus also the initiative on or the incentive towards comprehensive packages. If you have a comprehensive insurance package, you're more than likely to see a payout than you wouldn't. That's not to say it's guaranteed or otherwise, but that seemed to be the directive. And you rightly said there, yeah, an organisation that has its own website, has its own structure, etc. It's all set up very well and ready to go. We didn't really know about it until yesterday, but Sanadac is the people. The word that we don't use enough because none of us really understand it. Ombudsman.
Exactly. But that is only if you have an issue with your insurance company. We don't go straight to them.
No.
Because that's if you feel that your insurance company isn't doing the right thing, then you go to them. They are not your first port of call. Uh-uh. First port of call is your insurance company. And most of them, I'm sure, will do the right thing. Because typically people do. That's the point of an ombudsman, isn't it? It's for those exceptional cases where your bank or your insurance company, you feel that they're not doing the right thing. He says generously, in most cases, they do the right thing. That's a subjective opinion. You decide on that one. So the insurance guys are here just after 7:30 this morning. You're going to be looking at how the hospitality industry coped with all of this, aren't you, in about 45 minutes' time. You're going to be speaking to the new boss of Taj Hotels in this region.
Yeah, not a new boss in terms of a Taj boss. He's been the boss of Taj Dubai. He's been involved with the Taj brand for quite some time. But literally in the last couple of days, he's just been made the regional boss. So given a bit of a bit of a promotion, he's gone from GM to sort of basically regional boss as well. Interesting times as well for the Taj brand. Big investment into the brand here in the region. Big investment from their very well-known investors and owners back in India, the headquarters of the Taj brand. Interesting time over in India as well, with the election ongoing at present. But yeah, we want to focus on the week that was, but also look ahead to the future as well for a brand that is growing, not just across the UAE, but the region as a whole.
He is here, Saurabh Tiwari, 7:50, joining us live in the studio. Now, Oman, very much in focus at the moment in the UAE's relations. Sultan Haitham of Oman in the UAE over the past couple of days. And yesterday was business day. Lots of big deals announced. 129 billion dirhams is the ticket price that's been put on them. They cover things like green energy, railways, technology and more. Here's Dan Richards, economist at Emirates NBD.
Sultan Haitham, ruler of Oman, has been in Abu Dhabi on a state visit to the UAE with President Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, with the two leaders reportedly witnessing a number of agreements aimed at bolstering cooperation in different fields, including renewable energy and rail infrastructure, with a total 129 billion dirhams worth of investment deals signed. Cooperation in rail will, of course, become increasingly important as the development of a railway line between the two countries moves forward, while a new mega energy project worth 117 billion dirhams, including wind and solar projects, underscores a commitment to reducing carbon emissions within the GCC. And I think this visit is really pretty meaningful, as it really underscores the close relationship between the two countries. And while there has been a focus on SEPAs with countries from all over the world just recently, the GCC countries will always remain important trade and investment partners and will continue to cooperate in a whole variety of ways.
Dan Richards of Emirates NBD.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, a week and a day on from the storms, the floods, the rain damage that has affected much of the UAE. Certainly a lot of people suggesting that Dubai, Sharjah, very much the eye of the storm as well, this time last Tuesday. A week on. This was the morning that we were waking up to get a full understanding of the impact that weather formation had here on the city, on the emirate, on the country as a whole. A week on, we've also had a better idea of the impact it's had, both financially, emotionally and otherwise. Well, one Dubai-based HR expert says that some firms here in the UAE might have gone as far as breaking the law by not doing enough to keep their employees safe during last week's wild weather. That HR expert is the managing director of Fikra HR. It is Sarah Brooks, who's been kind enough to join us live here in studio. Morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
Thanks so much indeed for joining us live. This time last week, there was no chance of you making it into the studio. But a week on, an indication of just how quickly this emirate can bounce back and get things up and running. The show must go on, as they say. But also a time of reflection. and a time to look back at not just the physical impact, but the emotional impact, none more so than on employees. Your reading of the laws as it is at the moment, the directives that get handed down by the authorities, is there something set in law to protect employees during times such as last week?
Yes, there is. And the sort of the three key documents that we need to refer to when we're talking about this. And the first and main one is the UAE Employment Labour Law, which is applicable to the majority of companies in the UAE, with the exception of a couple of free zones. And within that, it very clearly defines that the employer is responsible for the health and safety and occupational well-being of their employees. In general, it also specifies that under supporting regulations which have come out, which is the cabinet resolution, the executive regulations, it will define in there any critical cases and instances where there might need to be sort of exemplary changes to that. And again, in emergency conditions such as like we faced in COVID, there would be particular resolutions issued from the government, and it refers to those as well. In addition to that, there's also an administrative decree, which is particularly around health and safety and occupational safety of workers in the workplace and in provided accommodation for those workers. So it's actually quite clearly defined that it is the responsibility of the employers to take care of their workers.
Sounds like common sense, as you said in your LinkedIn posts as well. And a lot of people will be nodding away and go, yeah, yeah, we got that, yeah. But how many people followed that through last Tuesday, and how many people left it too late?
I think I don't have numbers, to be perfectly honest, but I would estimate that based on the responses that I've seen in some of my HR network groups that I'm in and contacts and things, that the majority of employers did not follow the directives that were shared at the time of and the instructions of encouraging people to work from home, stay home, work safely and remotely.
We were forewarned.
Yes.
We were given forewarning that there was an adverse weather condition coming. Is the remit then on the organisation, the employer, to make a final decision? Or are employers too reliant on waiting for the government authorities to give them a clear and present indication?
I think there's a couple of issues. I think one is that the directives that come from the government are not quite as instructive as they need to be. We managed it during COVID, but I believe that was because it was a very clear on you know, a penalty, punishment, you have to work from home, it's a lockdown situation. And that forcefulness hasn't been carried through in this instance and with previous weather warnings either. And that's where employers are left in a bit of a grey area to make a decision themselves. They obviously have to think about their businesses, which I can totally respect from a financial aspect, continuation of services, and where you've got industries and businesses, hospitals, hospitality, that can't just switch everything off and remove people from the operation, it is a big concern for them and a massive decision to be made. Mm. But I do believe that there needs to be a level of responsibility or more improved level of responsibility from employers. Had they done that, had they even said, you know, we'll reduce the number of people that are in the office, we'll try and do flexible working, even after the first iteration of the storm that we had, because if you remember, it came through in three waves, you still would have been in a better position with fewer people on the roads, out and about and what have you, and with their families taking care of their home life than what we faced. You would have less damage. You were talking previously about insurance claims on vehicles. If you didn't have all the cars on Sheikhzayed Road, for example, you'd have that many less insurance claims.
Yeah,
so there's a massive impact.
I'm nodding away only because that's what I'm hearing in hearsay as well, that there was a lot of people coming into work on that Tuesday morning, a lot of people going, ooh, it's a little darker than we expected, etc. And the decisions were too late. And then, as you say, there's too many cars on the road, there's too many people trying to get onto metros, etc. And that was part of the ongoing problem. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, I with the clients and the networks that I work in, I advise people to notify as quickly as possible and make the decision. One of my clients, I said on Monday evening, we shared the email to say, if you can't get into work, if you don't need to be in work, don't come.
Mahmoud written in, lots of people have. Mahmoud says, yeah, but employees have no one to help them. Filing a complaint, they'll just get fired.
No, that's not true, unfortunately. They can contact the Ministry of Human Resources and they can file a complaint against that. Because this is an executive resolution of the labour law, it's in law for that. And the administrative decision is also under the Mochare labour law. If you're a free zone, you contact your free zone, you speak to the employee branch of that, and they will take the complaint. One important note to make, and it's a bit of a controversial clause within the law, is Article 14 of the labour law, which is under the prohibitions, and it actually says that it is illegal for an employer to force, threaten or punish an employee for not turning up to work. And that's what I've been hearing, is a lot of employers are docking people's pay because they didn't come in.
That's a really interesting point, because we talk about the Tuesday, the day of the storms, and people taking a late decision. There were rumours during the rounds that employers were insisting people come in the following morning. We saw even more carnage on the roads on the following Wednesday.
Yeah, I've heard lots of reports of that. I've had a number of HR representatives reach out and say, how do I convince my CEO that this just isn't on? That this just is not possible. People are trekking for 5 or 6 hours. I've spoken to team members who, in my local area at the supermarket, who get dropped off and have to walk for 2 hours wading through water just to arrive at the supermarket to have it open.
We have got about 30 seconds left, Sarah. Just to wrap up on this one, have companies, has the HR industry learnt from last week?
I would like to think so, but I doubt it, unfortunately. I think there needs, until there is a much stronger directive from the government to say this must happen, with it being left to employers' decisions and a little bit grey, I think it'll take a lot more before people make those definitive decisions as early as possible.
Do send us in your personal opinions. Good to get those of your experiences from last week. And we can't thank our special guest enough for joining us live here in studio. Huge thanks to all of you for your comments that are coming through. We will pass those on. But thanks also to Sarah for joining us live here in studio. Sarah Brooks, joining us on the Business Breakfast. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you very much.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
The aforementioned Frank Heimberger is Chief Personal Lines Officer at the insurance company GIG Gulf, and he joins us now on the line. Frank, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Richard.
So, first of all, the past week or so since the rains hit Dubai and the rest of the UAE, how would you characterise the situation for a major insurer of both vehicles and homes like GIG Gulf?
Yes, like you said, it was a very significant event, and many cars were damaged, many houses were impacted, and of course for such for us, we've been receiving a very significant number of claims since last week. It's really, really impactful. So from the nature of the claims perspective, of course, at this stage, most of the claims we are receiving are from individuals. And by far, the largest number of claims is coming from car insurance. As you saw, as we were discussing before, there are a lot of cars that were damaged, stuck on the road or parked. And we are now managing those topics. Home insurance is the second largest number of claims. As well, some communities have been impacted, and those claims are flowing. So, of course, for us, it's very important that we are side by side to the customer and handling their requests and supporting them in those very critical times.
What kind of sense do you get of the scale of the number of claims? GIG Gulf, formerly AXA, one of the major players, particularly in the motor insurance space, but in all of general insurance here in the UAE, do you get a sense of the scale? Can you put a number on it?
It's a tricky question. It will be a major one, probably a few thousand cars, and it keeps going. The flow of new claims is very, very steady day after day, and we expect the number of claims that has come to double in the coming weeks, and that's usually the case, but indeed the scale of this event is unprecedented.
Well, you say that motor insurance is by far the busiest sector for you. And of course, we had this directive out on Monday night from the central bank, which regulates insurance, saying that all comprehensive motor insurance policies should cover flood damage. But before that, we'd had other insurance experts telling us and other media outlets that actually, if you were driving your car during the floods, then perhaps a comprehensive policy wouldn't pay out for damage incurred to the motor vehicle. So where do we stand, Frank?
Yeah, it's a very important question indeed. As you said, when the car was parked, there is no question. If you have a comprehensive cover, then it will be covered. If the car was driven, as you know, it was reminded by the authorities that the cover is acquired, but there is still the general consideration in the policy, which is the duty of care, and each and every company will have to assess the particular circumstances of how the claim occurred. And of course, those who had, a careless behavior, and I don't know, if you drive consciously into a flooded tunnel, then the company might be rejecting your claim. But of course, the clarification of yesterday was very, very important. And we do expect, as far as we are concerned, the case of rejection will be minimal.
The case of rejection, you think, will be minimal for people with comprehensive insurance?
Yes, as far as we are concerned, yes.
Let's move on now to home insurance. Tom and I were having the conversation earlier. Within motor insurance, there's a clear distinction. Some people have third-party insurance. They won't be covered.
Yes.
Others have comprehensive. They probably will. But for home insurance, there's no distinction. No one has third-party home insurance. So what will be the key considerations there on whether or not payouts are made?
Here, there is very little exclusion. Most of the claims will be covered, not to say all the claims will be covered. There are a few bits and pieces, of course, if you have items that were left outside, etc., because you are as well, precaution needs to be taken. But overall, all the claims will be covered. We will indemnify, of course, the lost items. We will pay the repair to the buildings. And there is another important cover, and this is a hot topic at the moment. Most of the policies embed what we call alternative accommodation. So for those customers who have where the house is not fit for living, of course we are covering the cost of hotels and alternative accommodation. So that's basically the scope of the coverage.
What's going to happen going forward in terms of premiums? We know, for example, you've said that for motor insurance, premiums for comprehensive will probably go up, will go up after this. I'm thinking about home insurance, for example, and I'm thinking about my own home country in the United Kingdom. There are certain homes that are considered in flood risk areas that insurers simply refuse to insure now. Will we start seeing that from insurance companies like yours and others? Will they look at areas that have been particularly badly affected by the floods here and said, actually, going forward, we're not going to insure in XYZ community because the impact of the floods was worse there? Could that happen? Might that happen?
It's a very good question. As you rightly said, in the Western markets, the way home insurance is priced and underwritten is much more sophisticated than here. We are not at this stage at all. As you know, the penetration of home insurance remains relatively low in the country. For the future, we just need to remember that it's a major event, but it's not the first this year. It's the third event this year, by the way. In February, there was a significant floods as well and rain, same in March. So it's not the first event. And will it trigger different behavior from the reinsurers? It's too early for the insurers. It's too early to say. I do expect more cautious approach and distinction between, of course, apartments and homes, because the impact of the claims is different. Will it lead to a differentiated approach and to rejection of claims? I don't believe so at this stage, but this is something that, of course, some insurers might consider.
Khaled has written in, you say there will be an increase in comprehensive motor insurance premiums going forward. Can you put a number on that? Will it be 10% more? Will it be double?
No, not at all, not double. Here you need to remember where we stand. So first of all, it's a one-of-its-kind event. It's a very, very unique event. And I don't believe that this event only will justify a significant increase of the premium because it's a unique event. But of course, there is inflation in premium. Just remember that during COVID, the market reduced significantly the premium. And since last year, there is a catch-up to bring back the premium to the pre-COVID level. That's the general trend.
Frank,
and it's not linked.
We'll have to leave it there. We're out of time. Fascinating conversation. Thank you so much indeed for joining us. Frank Heimberger there, Chief Personal Lines Officer at the insurance company GIG Gulf.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Time for us to turn our attention to all things retail here in the region. Why? Because, well, we know that this is a part of the world that invests heavily into its retail infrastructure. And many people come to the city of Dubai to shop, shop and shop. Well, during 2023, retail sales in the UAE increased by some 6% to reach a total value of 230 billion dirhams. That's according to the new figures from the Dubai Chambers being released for the very first time this morning. Their president and CEO is Mohammed Ali Rashid Luta, who's been kind enough to join us live on the line and live via Microsoft Teams. Mohammed, thanks so much indeed for your time this morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
So, some extraordinary numbers again for 2023. 6% increase, 230 billion dirhams. Is this an increase across all sectors of retail?
Well, yes. This is an aggregated average. And I think there are very important elements that played a significant role in this growth. One of the most important one is the continuous growth in the number of international tourists. Dubai received more than 17 million tourists in 2023, which was one of the biggest contributors in the growth of the retail sector. Adding to that, the increased interest from consumers and growth of offering from retailers on the e-commerce retail. We witnessed a growth of 10% last year in the retail on e-commerce platforms, and we're expecting to have a continuous double-digit growth in the e-commerce retail for the next 4 to 5 years. I think summing up what I just said is the retail is growing in a very healthy pattern, and this even increased the appetite of more international retailers. At least this is what we witnessed through the retail summit, of their interest in investing into Dubai.
Yeah, certainly moving in the right direction, as it has been for quite some time, suggesting that the compound annual growth rate, or the CAGR, of around about 3.6-3.7% from 23 to 28. Does that therefore mean that we know that there are many targets in terms of the visions for 2028 as well? Are retail sales on track?
Yes, definitely. And I think since the launch of the Dubai Economic Agenda D33, we've been witnessing growth in different sectors, and retail is at the top of them. And having a healthy growth of around 3.7-4% as a forecast for the next 5 years, I think this shows that there is a healthy growth rate in the retail sector. And this even gives more opportunity for both SMEs and international investors to explore expanding in this sector, along with the growth that we see in both retail and real estate sector.
Every year we get more and more data when it comes to online sales and e-commerce. But every year we also have the conversation about bricks and mortar versus e-commerce. We know that Dubai and the wider region, no stranger to malls, to bricks and mortar investment as well. Just how influential and how important, how vital a role is e-commerce playing in the numbers at the moment?
It's extremely important. As I previously mentioned, we're having a 10% growth year to year. This is a very positive sign. And I think now even brick and mortar retailers, they're shifting more into the hybrid model. So they always utilize the e-commerce to have customized offering to cater the different behaviors and interests of consumers, in addition to adding more omni-channel offerings through their brick and mortar locations. So we've seen a growth into the hybrid offering by perhaps, you know, ordering online and picking up the goods from the store, or vice versa. If there's a product that's out of stock, then you can on spot order it through a tablet or any other means within the store, and then you get it delivered to you. And I think this hybrid model is what creating an increased growth or a new dimension for growth for the retailers.
You and the team at Dubai Chambers host a number of summits, a number of symposiums, a number of get-togethers throughout the year to basically talk to retailers here in the region, but also those internationally as well. Are you noticing any specific trends developing within the retail industry at the moment?
I think there is, based on the new verticals we have in the retail summit, there is an increased awareness and interest in terms of sustainability and digitalization, in addition to enhancing the traditional retail. And how can we really improve when it comes to value chain and logistics? And I think this is very vital in the next 5 years. How can we really increase our efficiency when it comes to the last mile logistics and delivery? We've seen growth in food aggregator. We've seen retailers benefiting out of this. We've seen new trends in e-commerce by promising delivering goods within 1 or 2 or 3 hours. And I think this really is closing the gap between the traditional retailer and the e-commerce that helps consumers really to purchase what they need based on the preference that they have.
Mohammed, we've seen in the recent days a number of authorities and entities here in Dubai pledging their support to those affected by the storms and the rainwaters of last week, the emergency services performing extraordinary tasks, the Dubai Municipality RTA getting the roads back up and running, the Central Bank coming out with their initiatives in recent days as well. Given the fact that a number of businesses, a number of retailers will have seen their livelihoods, their businesses affected by the waters last week. Just how much of an impact has it had? What does your early numbers tell you? And what sort of elements, initiatives can Dubai Chambers lay out to support retailers here?
First of all, we take this opportunity to thank all of the government entities and officials who really play an important role in getting the city back very fast. I think the turnaround time was superb. And going back to retailer, now all retailers are up and running before the flood in the same manner. We've been in touch with the retail business group about 2 to 3 days ago, and we've been discussing how can we help further. I think all of the shops are back up and running, and in case there are future challenges in this sector, we always have a dedicated team in policy and advocacy to work closely with retailers, not only during emergencies or challenges that are due to disaster or climate change, but even across when it comes to maybe disruption of global logistics or increasing interest rate or any other challenge that they face. We always work closely with them, trying to find solutions or unease some of their challenges, and working closely with the policymaker and the government to ensure that they have a continuous growth in their sector.
Mohammed, can't thank you enough for your time this morning. Can't thanks enough you and the team at Dubai Chambers for the support during tough times like this. And congratulations on those extraordinary numbers as well. That was Mohammed Ali Rashid Luta, President and CEO of Dubai Chambers.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.